Our next case this morning is Anderson v. Anderson.
May it please the court, my name is Gary Brandstetter. I'm counsel for the defendants, appellants, Richard and Margaret Anderson, and I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. My clients were sued by plaintiff respondent Judy Anderson because Judy claimed that ownership of the parties adjoining tracts 2 and 4 should be determined by the Cascade Survey performed in 1994, 19 years after Judy and her late husband Charlie purchased tracts 3 and 4 in 1976. Contrary to Judy's claim, the trial court expressly held that the common grantor, Mr. Caverly, sold tracts
Hadn't Judy dismissed her action before the trial?
Well, that's a complicated procedural matter, but yes, and this court...
I know there was the first appeal, but Judy reached an agreement with subsequent owners, and it's my understanding that she dismissed her action, and therefore the trial was on the counterclaims.
That is correct, and that does not affect what the fact that it was originally filed by her claiming the Cascade. So the counterclaim was, no, it's the Voorhees survey. And the trial court expressly held that tracts 1 through 4 were purchased and sold based on the 1969 Voorhees survey. Yet the trial court also held that the common grantor doctrine had not been proven. The trial court's error is purely legal. It was a perfect storm of at least 5 errors. First, the overriding one is that the trial court never realized that since Judy was the original grantee, she was not a subsequent purchaser. Therefore, the second common grantor question did not apply to Judy. Rather,
are you taking the position that the court did not in any way address whether there was an agreed boundary established between the common grantor and the original grantee?
The court held that the basis of the sales was the Voorhees survey. And that, frankly, was all of the evidence that there ever was.
And does the Voorhees survey establish an agreed-upon boundary as to the dispute that was before the court related to lots 2 and 4?
Related to what?
Lots 2 and 4.
That was what the trial was about, was the line, whether it was the Cascade line, which the court found the Cascade methodology has been adopted by the survey community as the correct methodology because of a 1974 Department of Game quarter-corner change. But the lots were sold based upon the Voorhees survey, which was the only survey in existence at that time.
And did the Voorhees survey establish the boundary?
Yes.
And how did it do that? Because all we have before us is a very rough diagram, and there are certain monuments set, but there are no monuments along the disputed boundary line.
Number one, in Exhibit 13, Charlie and Judy's notarized statement specifically states that there were monuments on the western boundary of tracts 2 and 4, just as there were on the eastern boundaries of tract 3.
or 1 and 3. Now, it was the southwest corner of Lot 4 and the northwest corner of Lot 2, the monuments you just referenced?
No, that would be the southwest corner of Tract 2 and the northwest corner of Tract 4.
Because Exhibit 3 shows the concrete monument set by the Voorhees survey, and if I'm reading it correctly, it does not set a monument on the west end of the common line between lots 2 and 4 and 1 and 3.
You are reading it correctly. However, in 1994, Charlie wrote to the survey firm Cascade and said there had been another survey. He talks about the two previous surveys, Voorhees and the one by RMC. And he said the RMC survey agreed with Voorhees, and he also revealed that RMC told him that the quarter corner put in by the Department of Game was erroneous. So he was arguing that the Voorhees survey and its markers were the basis of his sale, and it should remain the boundary. And that didn't change for 22 years, all through 1998. In 1998, they gave a notarized statement of all this, and they actually fixed their boundaries for Track 3 in 1998 by Exhibits 13 and Exhibits 14, so that for Track 3...
At the time of the sale to Judith Anderson and Charles Anderson, one had gone out and looked at the property. What would one have seen on the ground through inspection to show the location of the line dividing lots 1 and 2 to the north from lots 3 and 4 to the south?
All right, there are aerial photographs from 1974, 2 years before they purchased, and aerial photographs, a number of them, from 1976, the year they purchased, 3 months after they purchased. And what those showed is that there was the Voorhees line, which is extended from tracks 1 and 3 to the east. It continues along a pasture to the north and forest to the south.
Is this a swale?
It eventually was cleared, track 4 was cleared, and then the swale followed that line, yes. And that was the line, except that it then, for some reason, we don't know, Caverly, before he sold to them, the 76 aerial establishes that he actually continued west, and he cleared in a southerly manner that where it curved down to the south slightly.
And so is what you're telling us consistent with what your expert testified to about what those photos showed?
Yes. The expert said that even though he tried to see a fence under the trees by going using some to the north, and by the way, that's not in the record. So, you're asking me a question where I have to.
I was just asking whether the argument you were making about what the photos showed was consistent with what your expert testified to, and it's your expert who came in and had an expertise in reading photos, apparently, Mr. Curtis, I believe?
Mr. Curtis of DNR, correct. He said, yes, that line was absolutely
consistent. Thank you, counsel. You answered the court's question. I don't want to cut into your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Judy Anderson, my client, is here today. My name is Royce Degan, and I represent Judith Anderson in this matter. We see this case really differently, as does the record. This case proceeded to trial based on use and occupation, considerations of use and occupation, not of Voorhees line, not any other straight line. The
And the theories were adverse possession and acquiescence?
Correct.
And the common grantor doctrine.
That's correct.
Clearly that was an issue.
Absolutely. That rule was certainly an issue. But the line that the rule was intended to establish was not a straight line, and it wasn't based on a survey.
No.
Based on the trial. I'm sorry.
That's right. I mean, it was based, there was a lot of dispute and testimony related to this meandering line.
Correct.
And the swale.
And in Richard Anderson's trial memo, he says, the only remaining claims are based on use and occupation to a physical boundary. And that physical boundary was a fence, or what used to be a fence line, and the swale. And we know those are not straight lines. The fence, as the court specifically found, turned out to be a horse confinement fence, a meandering horse confinement fence, attached to trees in large part, that Judy's son, who was in college at the time, installed. And so the Voorhees survey was never, ever a basis for recovery, either in the counterclaim.
Well, that may or may not be, but there is a finding that Judy purchased based on the Voorhees survey.
Sure.
So then what does the Voorhees survey tell us about the court's ruling as to the common grantor doctrine?
Sure. The Voorhees survey tells us where the 80 acres out of which these two parcels were subsequently divided, where that was located. And that was pretty much it.
Well, no, there were lines.
Well, sure.
Dividing the different tracts. So it's not just a 80 acre.
Well,
there are lines that divide up the different tracts, including tracts 2 and 4.
But not visible lines, Your Honor. And that was with the...
what do you mean not visible lines? There was a diagram.
Oh, sure. Not to scale.
Right.
That showed essentially where these various, I think 13 in total, 10-acre square parcels were going to be. But the trial court made a specific finding that the break, as she referred to it as, the break between lots 2 and 4 was an imprecise break. It did not follow some particular line that could be seen or tracked. And she also found that it did not cover the swale. There was no, or go along the swale, there was no question.
So what you're telling us is that the court found there was nothing you could go out there and look at that would mark the common boundary.
Absolutely. The lot was it totally forested at the time. There was, and that is a distinguishing factor. Richard Anderson points to the Light versus McHugh case and says, well, that's dispositive here. But the different feature in that case is this, that in the Light versus McHugh case, the seller pointed out a fence or a fence line that turned out to be inconsistent with the actual legal description. We don't have that here.
So in this record, do we have any evidence about an agreement between the original grantor and Judy as to where the disputed boundary is?
No. But if I can explain that, the court found that there was an agreement. The agreement that was reached between Mr. Caverly and Judith Anderson and her husband at the time was based on his rough, not-to-scale diagram and the legal description. And the legal description is significant in this case. It is here's what it is. The south half of the northwest quarter of the southeast quarter of Section 22, Township 27, North Range 6 East WM. So these are not meets and bounds. I mean, we have a square 10-acre parcel. The legal description that the parties came up with, the original parties, Mr. Caverly and Judy Anderson, was just that description. And that description is deemed accurate by the surveying community. But
was there any evidence that Mr. Caverly pointed out to the Andersons a concrete monument at the east end of the common boundary line?
No, Your Honor. No.
Would we have a different case if he had pointed out that concrete monument to them and they agreed that marked the one corner?
You would have a somewhat different case. You would still have to determine where the other...
I understand that, but we would be drawing an arc then. We wouldn't be at sea at both ends of the line.
I suppose so, Your Honor. I don't know what the other facts would be. But for sure, in this particular case, Voorhees set no monuments at either side. And the reason was because when Voorhees did its survey in 1969, this 80-acre parcel hadn't been divided yet.
Well, Exhibit 3 shows a Voorhees monument at the east end of the common line between 1 and 2 to the north and 3 and 4 to the south, but doesn't show the west end of the line, if I'm reading the drawing correctly.
I don't think it, Your Honor. My understanding is that there's not a Voorhees survey at either end of the subject boundary, not at the east, not at the west. But as I said before, Your Honor, the case did not proceed to trial based on a straight line that the legal description certainly would yield. It went to trial, and the trial court itself made that statement in her decision denying the reconsideration motion. She said that the position the defendants took throughout this trial was that the court should recognize a visual line and reform the description based on that visual line. That visual line was in part an old fence line that we now know was a horse confinement fence and a swale. And at the trial, the two individuals who put in the swale and who put in the horse confinement fence testified had nothing to do with the boundaries in the case. Those were the factors that the case went to trial on. After that was denied, after the quiet title request was denied based on the documents, based on the theory that they put forth in the trial memo, it was then that the Voorhees survey all of a sudden became an issue. But I think the most important thing, Your Honor, that I could say here...
Well, it wasn't an issue. It was a new theory to draw a straight line.
Yeah, I mean, factually, it was there. Factually, it was way back. It wasn't pled as a basis for recovery in the counterclaim, and that's another problem with the Voorhees survey line.
Is there any evidence that would have been presented that wasn't, had that been pled?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow that, Your Honor.
Is there any evidence that you would have presented to dispute a claim based on the survey that wasn't introduced in this case already?
Boy, that's a tough question. To be honest with you, once I read the trial memo and I knew that we were now going exclusively on an irregular curved line, which has now been waived. He calls it a curved line. It's actually, I guess it would have been partially straight and partially curved. I'm not sure what I would have done differently, Your Honor.
So your discovery was all conducted with the concept that he might be claiming a straight line?
It was actually hard to tell, Your Honor, because the pleadings in this case were not all that concise. But it's clear that in the counterclaim, that the Voorhees survey was not a basis for recovery.
I'm trying to find out is if you were prejudiced by the assertion of this claim for the first time on a motion for reconsideration.
Oh, of course, Your Honor. I mean, absolutely. Because of the irregular, because the basis for this claim was the fence line and the swale, I brought in the guy who built the swale. I brought in the guy who put in the fence. Those were the primary witnesses that I had. And I was about to say, Your Honor, I think the most important thing here about this case is this. In the Horse Heaven Heights case, it establishes the basic rule that applies to all common grant, to all quiet title actions such as this. The party seeking to quiet title can only prevail on the strength of his own title. He cannot rely on any alleged weakness in that of his opponents. And that's exactly what Mr. Anderson, Richard Anderson, is trying to do on appeal. He's saying this case is only about Judy, and I only want her to be bound by the Voorhees survey line. That's because he can't prove his own case based on the strength of his title. And the reason for that primarily is this, that the addendum to his purchase agreement knocks that out of the ballpark. It says that, hey, there's a dispute about the line. We don't know what exactly the line is. I'm not telling you where it is.
Does that really relate to warranties and Richard Anderson sellers selling to Richard Anderson everything she owns, but she's just not going to warrant just exactly what that is because of the dispute?
Yes, but further, it also specifically goes to the elements of the common grantor rule, which is that for a subsequent purchaser like Richard Anderson, he's got to show that the party that he and his seller reached an agreement on a specific line and that there was a meeting of the minds as to exactly what the tract was. That was exactly the purpose exactly the result of the addendum that knocked that out of the case. So we could not prove the requirements for a common grantor claim on his title. He had to go attack Judy's, and you can't do that. It's not permitted. Thank you.
One of your honors asked if Mr. Caverly pointed out the monuments. The answer is in Exhibit 13, the notarized statement Charlie and Judy signed that says, Mr. Caverly pointed out the monuments.
Do we know which ones?
Well, he would have pointed out the monuments that were put in the ground.
Does Exhibit 13 say which ones?
But they knew how to dimension them off. And that's exactly what happened in Light versus McHugh. There were no monuments, there were no stakes or anything else, but they measured from a given point. And Charlie...
Is there any evidence that there was a measurement from a given point in this case?
Yes.
What?
In Charlie Anderson's 1994 statement to the surveyors, and in a 1995 letter that he wrote to Mrs. Gately, he said everything, the power, the roads, the fences, were all dimensioned off of. And this man had two engineering degrees, and he had another survey done by RMC to note where those were. Now, what we have to keep in mind is this is a contract issue. And the question is, what was the bargain? And Professor Stobuck, at least Professor Stobuck, in 17 Washington Practice at Section 822 specifically says, if the grantor points it out, and if the original grantee believes that that's it, that's as much of a contract and express agreement as you need. And these people not only believed it, they went and got another survey by RMC to designate the other points, and they also developed everything off of it and repeatedly said that this was their agreement. That's how they purchased. That's what they bargained for. That's what Light versus McHugh said.
Thank you, Counsel.
Whatever you bargain for. Thank you.